This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN? Oh, what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found — I am not a therapist — I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it, and sometimes it makes you realize, like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 37, sponsored by GeekArmor.com. Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This is our 37th episode. I'm Josh. I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor.
Hi, everybody.
Online from Arizona. little computer problem. Maybe you heard a little bit of a something in the Superman podcast. We decided to bring him in on the phone this time, which we also think is really funny sounding anyway.
Yeah, best to play it safe and get a lot of first-time caller, long-time listener, first-time caller jokes.
And it's so much fun for me to hold this phone with my ear for however long we do this.
I'm not gonna make a joke about the heat. I'm not gonna make a joke about the heat.
Sweaty ears. anyway, so here at ifanboy.com, we like the comic books. So we started up a website where we could talk about them. In addition to other threads and stuff we want to talk about, every week we each read a whole bunch of comics that we buy, and then one of us will do the pick of the week, which is the best book we read that week, and we'll write it up on the website, and then we come here and do the podcast and talk about it and whatever else strikes our fancy. The rule is that you're supposed to pick one book that's the best, but Ron is a little confused about how that works. We're going to get to that in a second. Here's my disclaimer. We're going to have to do this every week so we don't get the angry emails. It's a review show. As such, we will be reviewing as opposed to previewing. There may, in fact, be spoilers, so be warned, from here on out, we're talking about the books that came out just this last Wednesday, which was June 20-something.
28th.
June 28th. Comics was June 20. We're going to write that down in the future. Won't experience that hiccup. So, without further ado, I'm going to go and give it to Ron, who just has some problems making a decision.
Oh, no, I know. It's not an indecisiveness issue. Rather, it was, and admittedly, you know, I knew I strayed away from our format, but hey, you know, it's nice to shake things up every once in a while.
You did do the legendary comic strip style pick of the week that one time.
Which, that was really good, actually.
It was four hand-drawn panels of awful comics.
Well, no, because that was when Marvel did the Nuff Said event, when there was no words in any of their books, so I didn't put any words in my review, and I drew a comic in my review.
He did. Yeah, back to the past.
But that was pretty good. Anyway.
It was.
So, so this week was tough. I'll freely admit that this was tough. First and foremost, I had 13 books. I bought 13 comics. I spent like $40-something. It was awful.
On top of everything.
On top of the $40 I dropped on a bunch of indie back issues the day we went to see Superman on Tuesday. Which I haven't even touched that stack because I just got them back because I left them in Connor's bag. But that's a whole other story. It's not a whole other story. That's just it. I just left them in his bag.
He said, hold my comics during the movie. Connor said, okay. And then I
forgot to take them back. There's nothing else.
And then the gypsies came. It didn't happen.
Yeah. But anyway,
there was a ninja at one point.
A pirate. It was awful. So I got 13 books. And now, as we've discussed before, the way I read my books is I pick the books I'm most excited about and I think are going to be the best, and I read them first.
It's like eating dessert first.
Then I make my way down to the rest of the books. Well, no, for me it's a concentration thing, because by the time I'm at the bottom of 13 books of comics, my energy is sapped, and honestly that 13th book I flip through more often than not. Like I read it very quickly. Like I don't.
You shouldn't even buy that book then.
Well, no, and sometimes I go back and I read it when I have more time and whatnot.
That's the exact opposite the way we read our books.
When I'm not on the hook for the pick of the week, I'm very interested by that. I thought the way I read books is the way everybody read books, but I guess I think it's a
delay of gratification. Now, granted,
you want to build the quality up, not go down.
Yeah.
Well, my point is, I want to enjoy the comic when I'm at my freshest and when I'm at my best ability to digest it.
Given the deadline of having to do the pick of the week on the Wednesday night, I can understand that because you want to check out things.
I'm not going to waste my time with the worst book, the book I know I'm not going
to
pick.
But when I don't have to read them all at once, I do spread them out over a few days if I have to. So that means that the last couple of things, which were the ones I read last night, were the best books.
Yeah, and the thing is, I try to get them all read on Wednesday. So anyway, we're digressing. So so the six books that ended up being the picks of the week.
Was it two or three? It was six.
In the order I read them were, I'm going to talk about each book real briefly, and then we can discuss it, and then I'll get to my main gist as to why I picked all six books. But the first book I picked up off the stack was Wolverine number 43. And this was the first of the five Civil War tie-in books that I bought this week. There was a sixth for Fantastic Four, but I have no interest. For some reason, I have no interest in Fantastic Four, so I didn't pick up that one. Because I didn't want to read 22 pages of Reed and Sue fighting over the Registration Act. Like, okay, I get it. You know, they disagree. Ooh, family strife. But apparently it was about the Thing in Yancey Street, which might have been pretty good, but whatever, nonetheless. Maybe if I only buy two books next week, I'll pick it up. But so Wolverine number 43 is continuing the Civil War kind of subplot of Wolverine going after Nitro, who is the person who caused the whole Stanford situation, because he's pissed off that that Iron Man and nobody else felt the need that he was a priority to go track down Nitro and kind of deliver justice for killing 600 people, of which I guess 60 kids were killed.
Yeah, 60 kids. Yeah, they 60 really hammer kids. That home.
Yeah, exactly. We talked about it a little bit last time this issue came out, but so far this Guggenheim guy writing and Humberto Ramos's art on this book has made Wolverine like a must-read in this whole Civil War tie-in.
You hate this kind of art.
I know, but I love Ramos. I've always loved Ramos. I don't know why. I hate this kind of Chris Bachalo kind of art. I can never say his name either.
He's going to take over the X-Men pretty soon, you know.
I know. Don't get me started. But
I really like how he draws a very stumpy little Logan.
Yeah. But I really like Ramos a lot. I don't know why. And he's nice. He was nice to me at the con. So he drew me a flash head.
Nice.
So, yeah. Anyway, So in this issue, Wolverine tracks down Nitro and ends up fighting him and getting ready to deliver his brand of justice. Nitro does fight back and actually incinerates Wolverine down to a skeleton, and somehow Wolverine regenerates very quickly.
Yeah,
but, that was a bit of a leap.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a leap. But we get a hint of a greater kind of scheme or a greater kind of plotting in this issue when Nitro checks in with whoever his handler or who he's working for was. Mm-hmm. Just a taste, just a little hint of the greater sub.
Did either of you know who the Surfer guy is?
I had no idea.
Okay, good.
No.
To be honest. Yeah, I had no idea. I assume that we're going to find out.
All right, that's fine.
But
I never know that in comics, if it's something I should know or something I'm going to know.
But one of the thematic reason why I like this book a lot was because, you know, it reminded me of the Wolverine that I kind of, you know, like everybody else, fell in love with in the 80s. This, you know, kind of driven sense of right and wrong and sense of ability to carry through what he sees as right and wrong and not being able to walk away from something that's not right in his book, you know, be it teammates or friends or family, be damned. And it was that kind of drive that Wolverine kind of has lacked over the, you know, now that I read this issue and think about it, has lacked over the past, you know, 5 to 10 years. But it was just that kind of, you know, that sense of, you know, that he's going to deliver justice because nobody else will. And it was really good. So that was Wolverine number 43. After Wolverine.
Just real quick, I'm sorry. Did you read Greg Rucka's run on Wolverine a year or two ago?
Yeah.
I thought it was the same sort of attitude. I really
it was no great. It was no great shakes, though. I mean, I know you're praying to the mantle of Rucka, but it was all right.
All right, yeah, just okay. You know, whatever.
So, Amazing Spider-Man number 533. This begins moments after the Civil War number 2 reveal when Peter Parker reveals his identity to the world. And I find it interesting that, you know, they gave the reveal to Civil War number 2 and Miller, but they gave the ramifications and the kind of, you know, the moments after the JMS kind of a nice, in Amazing, kind of a nice, I assume, compromise. I imagine they probably fought over when the reveal should happen and what book it should happen. But this book was really interesting because it literally starts the moments after the press conference and we just see the snowball effect of this revelation of this, you know, unmasking occur. We continue to see J. Jonah's reaction and how mad he is at being lied to. And I thought it was really interesting at J. Jonah's response, not so much that he's mad that Peter was Spider-Man, but that Jonah felt as if he treated Peter like a son and really believed in Peter Parker as a person as one of the last honest people in the world.
Right. And betrayal more than anything.
Exactly, to see this as a betrayal, which I think if they were ever able to sit down in a room and talk about things, I don't think Peter ever recognized or realized that aspect of it, because he always saw Jonah as somebody, because to Peter, the way Jameson treats both Peter and Spider-Man was one, whereas Jameson, of course, didn't know that they were one, so they're separated into two, and I think that was a really interesting dynamic that I didn't expect, actually. But it was interesting to see, you know, the from the protests to the walking off the plane and getting slapped with the lawsuit from the Bugle, which I thought was a nice touch, to the little vignettes of all the different villains finding out the news.
I was a really big fan of the idea that, like, just when this happened a couple of weeks ago, a lot of people were like, oh, I can't believe they did this with the character. And this issue is so great because he was so upset because he can't believe what he did with the character.
Why did I do that?
Exactly. It's almost like this idea that he has this great sense of responsibility and sees this as the right thing to do, but then moments after has this, you know, the pangs in his stomach saying, oh man, what did I get myself into, you know?
And he's really unhappy about this the whole way through, and I thought it was really an interesting way to take it because he's sort of unhappy with this decision and it seems to be getting worse and worse.
Right, exactly. And I thought that this, of course, you know, lays down the groundwork for what we predicted, you know, in the last podcast, which is, you know, Iron Man's going to stab him in the back. Iron Man's going to betray him. It's going to happen. And it already kind of started when moments after Peter's press conference, Tony holds a press conference of his own stating that, you know, now that the act has been passed and the deadline to register has passed, that they're going to go after the ones that didn't register. And he drops Spider-Man's name as one of the heroes who are going to do that with whatever means are necessary. And Peter
is
aware.
It's betrayal, but I mean, it's certainly he's certainly.
Well, it's manipulation.
Certainly a camp he doesn't want to be in. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know that's it's the manipulation of using a miscommunication between Tony and Peter as to this is what Peter meant. This
Absolutely.
Is what Tony meant when he asked Peter for his full support.
It was less than above board.
Yes, exactly.
You know, what was really nice then following that the confrontation between the two of them.
Yeah.
Where Peter really asserts himself, and he's like,
yeah.
You know, it was something that's really interesting about that is that when you look at the way that they're posed towards each other, and sort of Peter is wagging his finger at them, you can't see their faces, but you really get the sense of the emotion. I don't know if it's the way they have the body standing or the way that the dialogue's been written, but you could tell what their faces would look like. You can see the indignation on Peter's face.
Yeah, to have that scene be in costume, I thought was a good touch. It was a really good touch.
Yeah, it really, so really well done.
Yeah, but what struck me about this issue from a theme standpoint, is that, you know, here we have, you know, Peter dealing with the responsibilities of his actions, as well as, you know, dealing with the Jameson betrayal, but as well as the impending kind of, you know, not good feeling in your stomach about what's going to happen with Iron Man, and to know that this betrayal, you know, to read it and to see the writing on the wall that something, you know, that it's going to get worse. And, you know, the thing is, I mean, if I don't know if they're going to make Iron Man into a villain or make him evil in this kind of angle, but, like, the shots in the press conference when they're zooming in on his face as he's talking, and just the kind of sinister eyebrow and the whatever means are necessary, really kind of, I'm not going to be surprised if at the end of the Civil War, Iron Man's on the other side of the fence in this kind of, you know, good versus evil type of situation. So,
what do you think the chances are that Reed Richards actually uses a big old clunky cordless phone?
That's a very good point. Even Sue was on. Wasn't Sue on a headset?
Sue's on a headset, but like, yeah. I'm looking at Reed. I don't think he's using that. I think he can do better. He can at least go Bluetooth.
That's a good point. Or something better. Something, you know, the next up from Bluetooth. You know,
I don't know.
Well, if you look, his phone has gotten thinner, but in the four panels later.
Yeah, it is true. Yeah, yeah.
Oh?
And he's curiously looking at a screw. It's so odd.
Maybe he adapted the phone in that conversation.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, so those two books were really, really great. So then after I finished Spider-Man, I'm like, great, this is going to be a tough decision between these two books, and I'm only two books in. So then the next book was X-Factor number 8, which is, you know, no surprise that I'm a huge fan of this run since the first issue and before this, the Madrox miniseries. I really like what's going on in X-Factor because I feel as if it's totally under the radar, and it's the one book that seems to be linking the House of M and Decimation events to the current Marvel continuity. And I feel as if, you know, in a couple of months, the events in this book are going to be like one of those ones where people are going to have to go back to the back issues to read to fill in, because it's going to have big ramifications.
I think you're absolutely right. It's a book that feels like it's under the radar, but the things that are happening in it are completely significant to the overall sort of Marvel universe. It's neat in that way. It feels like afterwards you're going to go, wow, this book really mattered, and I'm guessing a lot of people won't have read it.
Yeah, especially
since people are always asking where are the X-Men and all this, and this is really the only place the X-Men are.
Right, yeah, this is the X-Family kind of dealing with it. And especially considering that, you know, Siren uses her persuasive powers to get Spider-Man to spill the beans about House of M, so now they know what the secret is. And really what got me excited the most was the last panel, the last page of the book, where it's, you know, like, I love that feel, that same thing like that Daredevil a couple of months ago, when you know what's coming, and to see that last panel be a full page thing with their townhouse in the city, and Siren landing on the roof, and Quicksilver walking in the door, and Madrox and Strong Guy coming up behind him, like, you know that there's going to be not a conflict, but it's going to come to a head.
Yeah.
And I really liked the Layla Miller Quicksilver interaction towards the end. And not a lot of people probably read the Son of M miniseries that had to do with Quicksilver, but it wasn't that great. But I'm really, I think what they've done with Quicksilver as a character, by making him responsible for House of M and then putting him on this road of like redemption and seeking forgiveness, is a great thing to do to a character, and it gives a great story. And to see him, you know, after the whole debacle of the Son of M miniseries, to see him come back to his old teammates of X-Factor, I don't know why he's here, you know, and the fact that Layla Miller's there and knew that he was coming kind of makes the mystery even bigger.
She knows stuff.
Yeah, I know she does.
Hey, let me ask you real quick. I don't know if you can summarize it. What did Quicksilver have to do with House of M?
Everything.
I mean,
he's
like,
he
was responsible for it, but...
He talked Scarlet Witch into using her powers to make the House of M world.
Oh.
So X-Factor, I really liked. I know, Connor, you didn't dig the art as much.
No, I thought this guy does a little. He goes a little too on the nose with the facial expressions. He's trying to use photo referencing, but some of them are just odd.
There's one bad panel. It's the one where she actually does the Siren does the seduction power of Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's bad.
Like a head-on shot of Siren. And, oof.
I thought all the ones with Monet were bad, and... Richter. I like the style. The shadowy noir style fits the book, but
when
he tries to be very, very specific with the facial expressions, it doesn't
work. It reminded me of a colorized version of Jinx.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the panel when Spider-Man is fighting the guy, and like it's very I can see the photorealistic angle of it.
Yeah,
and so
I can see that.
But I liked it because they kept the look and feel. So X-Factor really, I mean, it was good mainly because of the impending, you know, things that are going to happen within. Plus also the prospect of bringing Quicksilver into the mix and his seeking for redemption. I really liked that. So then the next book that I dove into was New Avengers number 21, which was a breath of fresh air after last week's New Avengers number 20 debacle. It was the first Civil War tie-in within New Avengers and had Howard Chaykin on doing a guest spot on the art. And it takes place between Civil War number 1 and Civil War number 2, and it really focuses on Captain America, and I'm guessing that this is going to be the where we see Captain America's point of view told as opposed to his own book, because that's not really Civil War affected.
No, it's not tied in at all. Well, this is the only issue. I mean, every issue of this tie-in is focused on a different character.
Oh, okay, let's get
to that. So this is all we're going to get out of Captain America.
Right. And what I really liked about this is that basically in the issue is that it's showing Captain America team up with Falcon and start building his kind of resistance force. And him and Falcon go to recruit Hank Pym, only to find out that Pym is on the other side of the fence and they have to fight their way out.
It seems to be taking place between Civil War 1 and Civil War 2.
So right,
they're not quite caught up yet, but it's like leaps and bounds above where they were.
So yeah,
I think by just bringing this out this week, they're making up a lot of ground, which is good.
Yeah, exactly. And what really got me about this was Bendis's kind of the first couple pages of the Captain America kind of internal dialogue narration, where you know he's reflecting on the situation that he's in and basically you know feeling you know like saying I'm not even supposed to be here. You know, like it's just not like he's said, you know, why did they unfreeze me from the ice? Why didn't they just leave me? I'm from another time. Why should I even be dealing with these issues when they're not, you know, like this isn't really my world? The kind of the man out of place angle of Captain
America. And it
brought
back the whole artist aspect of Steve Rogers, which you haven't seen in years and years and years and years.
Yeah, I totally forgot that he was an artist. And using that to be like, you know, for him to say, you know, I should draw, you know, drawing made me happy. Why did I stop? You know what I mean? Like this kind of, you know, really internal reflection as to what made him as a person happy versus this path and this life that he knows of service and Avengers and America. And it really kind of subtly makes you see the kind of the balancing act between him as to dealing with what he, you know, feels is right versus what he's being pressured to do.
Well, the central question of the whole storyline is asked by Captain America in this book, which is, who are we playing ball with and who are we playing ball for? And why can't anybody answer these simple questions?
Right, yeah, and that it kind of it ties in because you would think that Captain America, well, one would think, you know, one who doesn't know the character or the history or whatever would think that Captain America would just kind of fall in rank with what the government was doing with the Registration Act.
He's quite cynical.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, but that's part of the American spirit, I think, is being cynical and making sure that...
Well, to half of us. I mean, literally, there's like that's like the split of what is patriotic. Is it patriotic to go with your government, or is it patriotic to expect the best of your government and mistrust them when you think they're doing the wrong thing? And it's interesting to me, for no other reason, that Marvel have said, well, let's take the stance with him that he's the kind of person who wants to question the government,
He's always had that history. He's left Captain America a few times because he's been disgusted with the government.
Maybe he'll put on the captain suit again.
Or Nomad.
Ooh.
I want Nomad.
No, you
Nomad
don't.
Ruled. Nomad ruled. Come on, the duster, the long leather duster jacket. Oh,
no, that's new Nomad. He didn't wear that costume. He wore the old one, the exposed head and the big...
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
Did he have exposed chest in that one?
Yeah, a little, like the open chest. It was very
nice.
Yeah, we never want to see that again.
But yeah, but that I think that kind of like you mentioned that scene with Pym where Pym is you know saying why don't you just see the big picture and play ball with us, and him questioning that is sums it up right there. And I don't know, I really like how Bendis did a really good job of approaching this character.
Josh, did you notice anything funny about this issue?
I did notice one thing that I kind of wanted to bring up, and I'm going to be delicate. I'm not quite entirely familiar with Sam. The Falcon. I don't quite remember him being quite so urban. And
yeah.
No, I'm not really being flippant in the fact that I just his black man dialogue seemed a little forced.
that first line right out of the gate when Falcon teams back up with Captain America and he says something like, you know, listen, brother, I'm not down with what they're saying. And it's just like
it really strikes me as it might be one of Bendis's weak spots, like Wolverine. But I think that he may
it's
have
very out of character for Falcon.
Is it?
Did not sound like Falcon at all.
I mean, like maybe if it was John Stewart, I guess, but that wouldn't make any sense. But still, like he's
John
just
Stewart?
Like the first, huh? Well, John
Why
Stewart
John...
was a little more from the street.
No, he wasn't, was he?
Yeah, in the original, when he first showed up in Green Lantern.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Oh,
he was.
Right, in the
70s.
Right.
Yeah.
Not anymore. Now he's been gentrified. Anyway, but like the first thing out of it is like, you passed out, man. I'm like, come on. Like, and I feel like Bendis was really forcing it with that, and that's not the character. And he did that with like when they reimagined Luke Cage, and I think that more belongs to Azzarello because he put him that way. But like,
yeah, Azzarello, it's all Azzarello's fault.
They've sort of retconned that sort of whole miniseries.
But this dialogue, the way of speaking, makes sense for Cage. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't work.
It does.
For,
well, Cage is softened. Cage, when he first started writing Cage in the beginning of Alias, Cage was sort of very street, and now he's less so, but he sounds authentic, but not over the top. Whereas this flight.
This felt forced. This felt
what it is, right. Blood. Like it's just silly.
It didn't feel right. Yeah, maybe. I mean, and I don't know how much experience Bendis has writing with this character. Maybe he just needs to flesh it out and get the feel. But I mean. You know, it's now Wolverine, Falcon, and you're absolutely right. This is showing a trend of dealing with African American characters.
And the teenagers, like in Ultimate Spider-Man, like some people have said, like the talk is a little outdated.
Yeah. Oh, it's very outdated.
It's just that same kind of thing. So, like, if he writes these introspective Spider-Man type characters, people who are stuck in their own head, he can do that really well. But when he kind of has to get out of that white guy, or even he can do women too, he does. It shows a little.
Right. So
he's not perfect. That's you know, not what he is.
No.
So after New Avengers, I dove into Civil War Frontline number 2, which
had a
again
questionable cover.
Quite yeah. Well, again, an example of my why I don't like covers, but not by the artist and also painted. But whatever. That's my own personal complaint. So
also, I didn't like Jake and Spindly legs. That's all.
Yeah. But again, I gotta say, this book was $2.99, and it's like 39 pages, and you got 4 stories in it. I mean, like, this is the biggest bang for your buck as far as Civil War goes. But that's not why I picked it.
Did you say it was Dane Cook as Spider-Man on the front?
It definitely looks photo reference on Dane Cook's face, which is stupid. also, I mean, if you're gonna reference the movie version of J. Jonah Jameson, you might as well reference the movie version of Spider-Man.
That would make sense.
Besides
the fact that it appears on the cover that the unmasking is taking place outside somewhere.
Yeah, and Iron Man's behind him and not Tony Stark, but yeah, whatever. But anyway, so this issue again is continuing, you know, the story of Ben Urich and the other reporter who only gets 2 pages, I think, in this issue.
I feel we really have to mention that Ben Urich is still awful in this book.
Yeah, they're.
He comes across very nebbish, very
he looks
very
like
sort
Woody
of reporter
Allen.
On the downslide, like Gil in The Simpsons. You know, just help me get that one last story. You know, he's leaving a very pathetic, very pleading voicemail for Peter, and it's this is not Ben Urich at all.
Yeah, no, it's not a good. It's not. It doesn't pair up to the Daredevil Ben Urich at all, unfortunately. But
not just the Daredevil one, but any Ben Urich we've seen in the past. This is like a new character completely.
Yeah,
but not good.
Also, aside from the
Spider-Man, and when Peter Parker shows up in the elevator, he's wearing like ballet jeans. I don't know what those are about.
Well, that's I mean, I don't think this Raymond Box guy is any good at all. And like the first issue was okay, but like that was the problem with Generation M, which is the same kind of approach Paul Jenkins and this artist doing, kind of like the media telling the stories. Yeah. And the art just got progressively worse and worse as the series went. I hope that's not what's happening in here, but I don't like Raymond Box art at all. But I'm seeing past it because the story is good, and the whole Iron Man skirmish with Prodigy is kind of like the first, you know, the first kind of spark in the war.
It was brutal.
I thought was great. I mean, it actually reminded me of that in, you know, in the American Civil War when the first battle near D.C. happened and, like, all the socialites and the elite went out to watch the battle. Mm-hmm. And then it got really brutal and they had to get the hell out of there.
Wait a minute.
This is real. They're really close and they've got guns.
The fight that takes place with the billboard lighting them in the background?
Yeah.
Really nice coloring going on there.
Yeah, the coloring was really good.
Rain and all this stuff. Like, there's that sort of last panel where it's actually like this helicopter's approaching and he's pushing down Iron Man's face.
The lighting effects are good. The thing is that this Raymond Box guy, he can draw heroes well and costumes well. He just can't. I mean, I don't like his people.
Yeah,
like his normal,
which
you know.
Is sort of a bad choice then for a book that's supposed to be about two reporters.
Yeah, exactly. But
reporter whose name I think is Sally.
Sally the Alky.
She had a good little scene with Firestar in that bar.
Yeah, that was her.
That was her talking to Firestar. Oops. See, I didn't catch that. I didn't realize who she was talking to, and I wanted to know why Firestar had a costume on in the bar.
Yeah, I think that's just a creative license to explain who she is because we haven't seen her for like 4 years.
Right.
So.
Also, it probably serves as legal age drinking because she says she's in college here, so she's in a costume. She won't get carded.
Well, I think she's in grad school, but
you're in the X-Men. You get to drink.
Yeah, she was never in the X-Men.
Okay. Either way, if you were in the X-Men, I don't know.
Right. She was in the Avengers, so there you go.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. She was an amazing friend.
But it's interesting how she was telling about how the real world effects of the C-list characters, where she, you know, she's got to get a job and she's going back to school and being, you know, this just makes being a hero that much harder and puts her, you know, loved ones in danger. And so, in her dealing with it is she decides to quit and it ends. And probably one of the reasons why she was in her costume and the bad leather jacket was so she can throw her mask off, you know, at the end and say that she quits, which was, you know, interesting. And you know, I always like Firestar. But
why do they keep putting Sally around booze?
I know, she's like in a bar. Is she actually? Yeah, she's drinking too.
She gave up. She fell off the wagon last issue.
Yeah. That's where you can find her now, in the bar.
Yeah.
Anyway, but the real star of this issue was the second backup story that Steve Lieber did the art for.
Steve Lieber
with Speedball in basically, you know, Gitmo, and dealing with the deal that the government's trying to give him, where he admits his guilt in the Stanford incident and becomes an example of the Registration Act. And Speedball stands up for himself and says he didn't do anything wrong and won't sign anything.
And pays the price.
This is how you do facial expressions in a comic book.
Yeah, this is really good. And I thought the two things that really struck me were the army guards who were transporting him, kicking his ass in the elevator, and then them dumping him in prison in Alabama.
They throw him off. They throw him to the wolves.
Yeah, but and it's interesting how they have the red line between the inmates and the equipment room or whatever.
And I thought Lieber
did a great job of actually showing him cross the line.
Yeah.
You know, and
no
and
touching.
Yeah, and then he gets his ass kicked. So, but that really struck me because you know the theme of it is that, you know, poor Speedball doesn't think he did anything wrong and is desperately wanting somebody to help him, and the government just won't let anybody help him, and they want to make an example out of him, and kind of fighting a battle that he can't win. And it's gonna be interesting to see how this progresses through the rest of the book.
He's not completely right because they are correct in the fact that he was doing a TV show, and that was irresponsible. I think.
Well, yeah, no, but the thing is that he didn't blow up Stanford.
True enough.
I mean, that basically what they're saying is that that the blame of what happened was his to blame, and it was Nitro. Nitro did it, you know. Like,
right.
So I don't know. But
great, but yeah, it's a really good little segment. It's got all these parallels, of course, to, you know.
Right, and then the last two backup stories were really good and brief and but you know short and to the point. But we had a little mini. We saw the rest of the Peter Parker press conference where he unmasked.
We really saw the meat of the press conference. This is one of my favorite little sort of few pages of the week, I thought, where like it was kind of funny and it was like people were asking him stupid questions and he was answering them and he was being honest, and then they asked him about Gwen Stacy and he was being very forthcoming. I thought it was very sort of well done because Jenkins does write Peter Parker very well.
Yeah.
The only problem I had is they're still trying to convince us that Peter's got three jobs and it makes sense.
No,
that's
doesn't.
Just going to bother you to the end of the.
It is
the
because
world.
I understand you have to suspend you know disbelief for these kind of things, but it has to make sense in the context of something.
Yeah, I know, but the thing is that these are all these elements that they've created to make the character. So as opposed to, I don't know, I understand why they're doing it, but I agree it's annoying, but it's not that much of a hang up for me.
And here we see that SHIELD play dirty.
Yep, recruiting Norman Osborn.
That's really awful. I mean, that makes me think that what's really we're starting to get to is that S.H.I.E.L.D., like whatever the evil force controlling S.H.I.E.L.D. is going to be the real enemy at the end of the whole thing.
And whether
maybe
that's tied to whoever in Washington, D.C. that Nitro was on the phone with, I guess will remain to be seen.
Right.
But and then the last backup story was another Jenkins' attempt to apply the real world happenings of Civil War with historical context.
Or
which I love.
12-part HBO series Rome.
Jenkins had Rome on Netflix this weekend, and then the weekend he wrote this, and he's, hey, that's a good idea.
No, but it works, though. I mean, because
it works. I mean, absolutely. Not Wolverine. Iron Man has crossed the Rubicon, but at the same time, it's if you've seen Rome, it's
yeah,
Rome.
I didn't see Rome, so I didn't. That carries no weight with me, but
isn't Kano the artist who is doing he took over Gotham Central.
Yeah.
I thought this art was great. I mean, the intermixing, like the guy drinking and Prodigy drinking and the battle and everything. Like they made the two worlds kind of merge together, you know, down
very
the middle
nice
pretty well. Yeah, it was good.
Did you think Prodigy needed to be drunk for that? I mean, I guess it's the point, but like,
yeah,
it sort of makes that battle less significant because he was just a drunken lout on a building.
Yeah, but he was so upset. I could see why. I don't know.
Sure.
But,
I'd be upset. I'd be drinking too. He's a lame character. Yeah.
So, finally, the last book wasn't Civil War, but similar to Civil War in that it was just great. Daredevil number 86, which just continues the amazingness of Daredevil that Brubaker and Lark are doing after Bendis and Maleev. And we have, you know, basically the prison riot breaks out, and we have, you know, Murdoch having to team up with Kingpin to survive. And ultimately, then, you know, the Bullseye gets into play, and Kingpin hatches a plan for Daredevil, Kingpin, and Bullseye to get off the prison island.
The Kingpin's got a card up his sleeve.
Exactly. Nice. And then we also get, you know, Punisher, who during the riot never leaves his cell and is reading a book, but there's still four dead guys in front of his cell, which is awesome.
It's kind of bold not to show that.
Yeah, but this was really great because, again, you know, it's Murdoch, you know, dealing with the cards that are dealt with him, to continue the card pun, and basically got his back up against the wall and needing to do whatever it takes to kind of survive and to protect.
But also at the same time realizing he's gone perhaps one step too far.
Well, yeah, and that's when, you know, when the riot kind of quells and he sees Bullseye is involved and has to make the decision as to whether or not he's going to follow along with Fisk or not, and he kind of gets back his center and gets back his you know realization that he can't go this far, and basically takes out Bullseye and Kingpin in a span of like 10 seconds, which was awesome. But great fight scenes and you know, while the fight in the prison riot was really cool, but it was I was more interested in Murdoch's motivations and Murdoch's, you know, kind of dealing with the situation and doing what he has to.
How many more times do you think that Brubaker's going to be able to put Frank Castle on the last page? Like, that's the thing.
Honestly, he could do it seven more times.
I know.
Every time, I'll just be like, oh, yeah!
It was really cool in this one.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was badass.
Another really small moment that I thought was important in this, and I think is going to come back to be important, is when Matt saves the warden.
Yeah.
You
know, starting to realize that something else is going on here, the warden does, when he's watching it, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly.
That's
going to
be
another example of great facial expressions without being overly photorealistic.
Yep. So Daredevil pretty much, after I got past Daredevil and I've completed those six books over the span of about 45 minutes, I just realized that I was screwed. Because there was really no way to pick one book out of these, and it wasn't so much because of what happened in the books or what, you know, the ramifications of Civil War were or whatever. But after I read these six books, I felt I had this overwhelming feeling, you know, and you know, pardon me for getting a little kind of cheesy and a little kind of, you know, emotional or whatever.
Give the music,
but. After I read these six books, I felt overwhelmed, not by the sheer number of comics that I had to read, but overwhelmed by the sense of themes and the sense of really what makes these comics so good and why, you know, 15 years in, I'm still reading them. And I've always kind of pushed off the comic habit or hobby as an escapism, you know, kind of like I've worked a long day, you know, every Wednesday I can look forward to an hour or two of reading comics and getting away from my reality and getting into these reality. But each of these books were common in that they all put the characters in a moral or kind of personal situation where they need to make decisions or they need to deal with situations presented in front of them. And that's really kind of what, I know it's been said a million times before and what Stan Lee did with Marvel Comics back in the 60s, but that's what's always kind of attracted me to comics and Marvel specifically was that they, you know, Wolverine has claws and Spider-Man can climb walls and Daredevil's blind but still can do all the amazing things he can do. But at the end of the day, they have regular problems like the rest of us. They need to deal with the fact that they're, you know, they're being accused of something that they didn't do, or they need to defend themselves in the eyes of someone else, or they need to, they're wrestling with the fact that, you know, the right thing isn't happening and righting a wrong or that sort of thing. And they're really kind of relatable situations in extraordinary environments. And I thought these six issues really summed it up and made me kind of realize that the reason why I read these comics isn't so much about, you know, escapism, but more about that these are kind of like the, I mean, I know with kids and all this stuff, it's a touchy subject to throw this word around, but these are kind of my role models. These are kind of the templates of how I would want to be. And it's hard not to, I mean, I question you guys or anybody else to read these specific issues and not find some way to have that relate to what might be going on in your own life. And, you know, like I said in my review, you know, like Wolverine, I want to be the best at whatever I can do. And like Daredevil, I don't want to have any fear. And like Spider-Man, I want to have the sense of responsibility. And that's, that plays into how I live my life. But then
I was in prison. I mean, it was a lot like having.
Nice. Wait, you know, here I am pouring myself out. Way to make a joke about it. That's really sensitive, Josh.
See, people think we're fighting. will you laugh, please?
Funny stuff. No, but anyway, but the also aspect of it is that these characters are also, you know, they have these powers, but they are human. You know, like Quicksilver and Speedball, you know Quicksilver just wants to be forgiven, and Speedball just needs somebody to believe him and to listen to him. And you know, and Daredevil, you know, is completely alone and needs to do whatever he needs to do and make, you know, tough choices to defend himself, but then also be true to the people that he loves. Spider-Man's got to deal with, you know, this sense of responsibility, but also the ramifications of that and the dealing with the possible betrayal that will come with it. You know, and the one that got me the most out of all of them was probably Captain America, and just that sense of, you know, like, I'm not even supposed to be in this situation. Like, how did I find myself in this position? So that, you know, so that was kind of why I kind of, you know, skewed the review this week and went with six books as opposed to just one. So that kind of sums that up. Plus it was really hard to pick from 13 books because there's so many books came out this week.
So many books. When are we getting a break?
That's the question. And the question is that are we buying so many books because they're so good and we're buying more and more and because they're so good, or because it just happens to be a busy season?
Discuss. Both. It's probably both. I think a lot of it has to do with Civil War, and 1 year later, I'm definitely buying more books Civil War related. I'm definitely picking up extra titles I never would have before, and 1 year later, I experimented a bit, and that's definitely been the reason why for the last month, I haven't had a week where I've bought less than 10 books, which never happens.
No, I usually get a week, like maybe 1 week like that a month, but it's been like 6 weeks straight now.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
It's starting to hurt.
It is starting to hurt. It's starting to cut into my bottom line. I'll tell you that much.
I'm not gonna lie. You know, like now because we have the podcast and we have listeners and we have stuff like that, and I want to know more about what's going on at the same time. But I'm still not gonna buy books that aren't good.
Right.
You know,
well, but there's definitely a creative renaissance happening, especially at Marvel right now.
A lot of good books out there.
Yeah. It's tough. Well, and I'm looking forward to. I'm hoping next week is like the 3 or 4 issue week, so I can take a little break. Just
I think
like
we're not
going to
see that till the fall for some reason.
Oh, God. What's your ideal stack of books per week?
Five or six.
Yeah, I'd say that 6 or 7.
I'm like 7 or 8. That's where I'm comfortable with.
So 5 to 8, we're saying.
Yeah, 5 to 8 is the good. You know, listen, yeah. Marvel, DC, Image, everybody else. Only give me 5 to 8 books a week, please.
If I'm spending $12 to $15, I don't feel bad. That's good. That
well,
makes 12 me
to 15 bucks is like, that's 3 or 4 books. That's not.
No, I get a discount at my shop.
Oh, so do I. But
how do we feel about the fact that there was 5 to 6 Civil War books this week, but there are weeks go by where there's nothing?
Well, I think this is the first kind of tie-in full swing, and I think from this point forward, it's going to be at least 2 or 3 every week. I'd be surprised if it's not. I think that the kind of they were getting the schedules lined up and all stuff like that. But looking at the books that are supposed to start coming out, I mean, like all the mini series one shots haven't even started. Things like Cable Deadpool, like stuff like that. Like it's going to be Civil War through the.
I'm not buying Cable Deadpool, by the way.
I actually am going to because I don't buy that book, but I'm really curious as to why Cable's on Captain America's side, and basically Iron Man's going to hire Deadpool to hunt down heroes, which is great.
You don't know why Cable would be on the side of the people who don't want to be registered?
Well, no, I know why, but I want to know why. I want to, like, I'm sorry, not that I don't know why, but I want to see him come to that. I want to come to that decision. So,
I would say in the spirit of buying so many books this week, I did cut Moon Knight because I don't have any more room for books that I'm on the fence about.
I also dropped. I went in and I was like, all right, I can't buy 14 books again. I just can't keep doing it. And I was trying to look, and I didn't really have anything to cut. But I noticed a new Action Comics came out, and somehow I'd missed the last Superman, and I really wasn't enjoying that all that much. So I went away from that one.
It was good. It was the best one. But
yeah, of course it was.
Of course. Oh, before we move on any further, I totally forgot how good was the Howard Chaykin art on New Avengers 21.
Spindly legs.
I loved it a lot.
I loved it.
I was surprised that you both liked it, because this is actually, if you have been listening to us, you know that this is sort of the opposite of what normally happens, is that I don't really like... I realize that Howard Chaykin is a legendary artist, and I'm sure that his work fit very well with some of the stuff he'd done in the past. I didn't think it fit very well with an Avengers book. I thought more of a traditional artist would have been... But you know,
well, what about it didn't fit in the Avengers book?
What I didn't like was, just solely from a standpoint of anatomy... there was a couple of panels where he just looked really weird, and the legs were not right, and that's okay on some kind of smaller books, but it's Avengers, you know, it doesn't seem right there. Listen, I didn't even mind the one last week that everybody hated, so...
Yeah,
that is so weird. What is going on with us?
Yeah, if you liked Theodata last week better than Chaykin this week, then
I didn't say I liked him, but just it's more fitting with Avengers.
It was so great to see Chaykin in a mainstream kind of high number book again to let people see. Like it was, I mean, every shot with Captain America with the shield looked great.
He does awesome faces.
Yeah, he does. And admittedly, this is not. I mean, it's a style that people aren't going to be used to. It's not like, you know, Jim Lee or Rob Liefeld or any of those.
Yeah. I hate Jim Lee. You know. Rob Liefeld is not the standard I'm talking about.
No. But if you look at all the artists that are around now, a lot of the artists that came out, a lot of their bases are around, you know, the early '90s, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, Art Adams, like those kind of artists.
Stop saying the name of the devil, please.
Those aren't the ones that I'm talking about. I mean, like, I think that the new style of things, the Steve McNivens, the John Cassidys, the other people. I think.
George Perez.
Sorry.
I would say, so where do they owe their influences from?
I think a lot of that comes from Brian Bolland. I don't know. I'm tired.
Yeah, I would say the John Cassidys and the Steve McNivens owe more to Howard Chaykin than to a lot of the other artists.
Oh,
you know?
I don't know about that. I think
I would the Howard Chaykins and the Neil Adams and stuff like that. Absolutely.
I think it's a cleaned up. See, I don't put Howard Chaykin in the Neil Adams. I think there's a line from like George Perez to Alan Davis to John Cassidy to Steve McNiven. Like those seem to have something in common stylistically. Whereas I put Howard Chaykin in more of like a Frank Miller kind of camp, where like it has its own look and feel and doesn't really look like anything else, and it works
for
some
things.
Yeah,
and I don't mind it really. I like the idea of Howard Chaykin being on there more than I like the reality of it. I'm glad that they have him on there. I'm glad that people get to know him, and I hope that people like it and then go back and they say, "Well, I need to read some of Howard Chaykin's work because that's important and significant work." But I don't.
Yeah. Well.
I didn't love this issue of Avengers. I just thought there was some.
It was great.
Very weird. I mean, even if you like the art, I thought the story was really strong and important.
It was really strong. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
So what did you like this week?
I thought Daredevil was the greatest thing since sliced cheese. However, I did want to take a minute to bring up a book that came out this week that neither of you guys read. Somebody's gonna be mad because we don't mention 52, which was actually really good, by the way.
Whatever. We got. Freaking 42 more issues.
I know
that.
I was disappointed that Elongated Man shaved.
It
was a really good issue of 52. We can talk about it on the website there if you want to bring it up over there. Anyway, I wanted to bring up Lucifer, number 75, which was the final issue. Kind of snuck up on me. I knew it was ending, but I didn't know this was going to be the last one. Makes sense. 75 issues, which is exactly how many issues that they had. And I don't want to hear it out of you, Ron. Exactly how many issues there were of Sandman. And basically, this book is a spin-off from Sandman. You don't have to have read Sandman beforehand. It's actually a completely different type of story. I would say it's much, much more coherent and linear. Basically, it's a story about Lucifer, Satan, the devil, the Morning Star, what have you, which is, you know, biblically a story of the angel who decided, you know, not to be part of God's plan, and he fell, and therefore he ended up being the ruler of hell. And of course, we've always traditionally known Satan as being the bad guy, the trickster, the awful, you know, like the root of all evil and everything like that. But that's not how this book is written. This book is really, and it's 75 issues. It's a big long story, and I honestly can't think of a more coherent, sort of driven book that I've read for this long. It's been the same artist, same writer all the way through. It started telling a story, and for this whole time it's been driving towards the end of this story. It's just, it's been so good and so literate and so intelligent, but without being sort of, a lot of times somebody says something intelligent and you don't quite get it. It's not hard to grasp. It's dense, but it's very good. And one thing that really struck me about this, which was something I'd never seen before, there are four or five pages in the middle of this which recap a scene from Sandman when Lucifer first appears. And the Sandman goes and he meets Lucifer, and basically Lucifer gives him the key to hell, and Lucifer tells him, "I quit, I'm leaving." And that's sort of where this book sort of starts, because you find Lucifer after he's left hell and he's sort of doing whatever else he wants to. Anyway, what it is, it's five pages of dialogue directly from Gaiman. But now all of this dialogue has a completely different perspective than what it had in Sandman. And you, it's a really neat experiment that was done. It's not an experiment because I think it was successful. Is that all of a sudden it has this other context, this other feeling, and you know where Lucifer is coming from. Whereas when you read it in Sandman the first time, it seems like he was like playing a trick or he was being a jerk. When really you find out now he's being sincere, and maybe that was part of his trick. Anyways, this book, fantastic ending to a really, really great series. And go out and get the trades if you
You've been talking about this book for the entire length of
the life of iFanboy,
and I think at this point I'm probably convinced enough to start buying, or buy the first trade anyway.
Yeah, I'd say within the first one or two trades, it's the level of quality never goes down, and most people I know who've started reading it have really liked it. I mean,
it was the same creative team throughout the entire run, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's great. I can
really
respect
great.
That. That's cool.
It's just,
but the
it's
most
just
important question
balance.
That Ron wants to know is he doing cover art too?
No,
as a painter who does the cover.
Oh!
Yeah, but does the same painter do all the covers?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fine. The team is there. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to get back on that topic. But anyway,
I mean, like this cover.
I'm gonna start buying it.
It's good. I think there are 10 trades out, maybe 11. I really dug it. I liked it a lot, and it ended
cool.
Great. That's one of those other things. Like something, so a lot of things start out great. It ended great. It was a fine ending.
Cool.
Didn't drag on too long. Anyway, so that's
go
really one of my big recommendations.
Awesome. All right. Well, that was a lot of comics.
Well, after that, you picked 6 books for your pick of the week, Rob.
Yeah, I know. I'm sorry.
This is why
I hated you on Wednesday.
I'm sorry.
Because I normally, you know, I read my books late on Wednesday unless I have to pick, and I make a point of checking the website to see what the pick was to make sure I read that book so that I can join in the conversation. And then I saw 6 books, and I was like, oh, my God. I'm going to drive up to Connecticut and beat you to death.
Well, I started reading at 6 p.m., so I got a leg up on you, I guess. So
I think so.
All right. Well, so now's about a good time to talk about geekarmor.com. Our lovely sponsor this week is geekarmor.com, who sell t-shirts that are targeted at the geeks.
Some would say some of them are snarky or
exactly.
Witty.
They
all
a
the
geek arm
in the world could have saved you from my beating in last week.
Nice. A lot of comic book t-shirts, video game, sci-fi, movie, TV t-shirts. If you go to geekarmor.com, I'm sure you'll find something that you dig. They've got their latest original design is a red shirt with a phaser hole in the front. It says, "I went on an away mission and all I got was this lousy t-shirt."
Is that the guy who gets killed every time?
Yeah, Star Trek, which is pretty funny. That's a good,
the ensign.
So also what's really cool is that if you go to geekarmor.com and use the coupon code IFANBOY, that's IFANBOY, you'll get 10% off your first order, which is very, very cool and very generous of them. So, and that's good until the end of July. So go to geekarmor.com, that's GEEKARMOR.com, and check it out. So we all need to wear shirts, so might as well buy them from here. So
that's the worst pitch I've ever heard. We all need to buy shirts.
Well, you
might
need
as well
it,
buy
so.
Them from them. You know, you go into a restaurant, you got to eat.
So thank you, Geek Armor, for sponsoring this episode of iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. So what else has been going on this week?
We got one letter. Yeah. Which I think we can talk about. Well, not that we got one, but one letter worth talking about.
You don't tell them we only got one letter. You tell them we got tons, but we've only got
We did get more than one, but we got one letter worth talking about, which was from someone who wrote in previously, name of the Bat. And the...
Connor would still have words with you.
I would have words. He's got a real name, which I don't have in front of me, so I apologize for that. But he wrote in to say he introduced the podcast to his fiance, who thinks comics and anything to do with comics, except for movies apparently, are for dorks. But she loves him anyway, supposedly. She wondered how old we were, and because she doesn't understand anybody loving comics at the age of 31, which is how old the Bat is, and what we would do for a living, and if we had kids. And why?
God no.
So
we're all of the 29-ish age, right?
28.
Connor's a youngin.
Don't Connor's be aging me prematurely. Yeah,
so we haven't gone over that 30 hump, but I talk about it a lot.
Yeah.
I'm almost 30. Do you know how many times I say that in a day?
I think the whole thing is that comics really aren't for dorks, and that
the Bat's fiance needs to go to the comic store on Wednesday and see that there are no actual kids in the comic store. It's
everyone there is 25 to 35. Easy.
Right. We were kids at one point, but now we're all adults. So
yeah,
she
needs to go check it out and see that it's all it's all 25-ish and up, and it's all not dorks.
Exactly.
Only half.
So
well, there are some. I'm not going to say there aren't any.
You need to school her there, the Bat. School her. Yeah. So
what you got to do is give her some books.
Yeah.
You got to give her some of this stuff, and you got to get her over the hump of, I don't want to read this as a comic
right.
book. Go get something like, we've done this before, but Box Office Poison or something out of the superhero realm.
And Strangers.
Like, oh, Strangers in Paradise.
Give her Strangers in Paradise, and she'll understand. So it's a storytelling medium, that's all. It's not.
It's just like TV. It's just like movies. It's just like radio shows. It's just another way to tell a story.
Radio shows.
Yeah, they used to have old radio shows.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
I couldn't think of anything other than TV or movies. A book, a novel. It's got pictures. Come on.
This week on NBC Soap Opera Hour.
Hey, Jimmy.
I shake a big piece of foil for Sunder.
Yeah, exactly. Who's at the door?
I hope it's not Nazis.
All right,
So comics are not for kids or for dorks. They're for regular people who are adults and like.
And speaking of regular people for adults, how many people joined the Frapper Map this week?
A lot.
It was
he's not going to tell us how many. We did have a
218. We're at
218. 218. Yeah, to a lot of people.
Yeah, we got lots of interesting posts. We got one from Todd Kearns in Michigan who says he wanted to give us a shout-out. He loves the show, and Ron is the coolest whiner in comics journalism.
I don't know if that's a compliment.
We're not journalists.
I liked it.
That's going to go on my press clipping sheet.
I think you should get a business card with it.
Yeah, good idea.
So
good
you're the coolest whiner in comics journalism. Connor's got the creepy voice, and I'm the other guy.
Yeah, pretty much. Who doesn't really know anything about comics.
Who said that?
Connor.
I didn't say that.
Connor, be nice to Josh.
We also got Denise in South Ozone Park, Queens, and we got Steven in Richmond, Virginia, and Beastie in Sumter, South Carolina, John in Michigan, and we got another England pin from John Wilson. And John, we send our condolences on the World Cup. Yes. Now you know how we feel.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile,
so lots of people. 218.
Meanwhile,
good.
It is halftime, and Brazil and France are tied at zero.
Way to date us. This is supposed to be timeless.
That's fine.
You just pinned it down. Damn it.
Maintain the mystery. I love the fact that we've got so many fans in the UK, but like we've told our folks in the US, on iTunes is a completely different thing in the UK. And any comments that people leave for us in the United States don't carry over to the folks in the UK or any other country. So if you're in another country and you use iTunes, leave us a comment. Tell everybody what you think of the podcast. We assume
we only have one comment on iTunes in the UK. How I know that, I'm not revealing.
Yes. and also, if you're in the US, and you're in iTunes, feel free to leave us a comment. Tell everybody what you think of the podcast. So
go to Frapper. Go to ifanboy.com. That's not even close to being right. Go to frapper.com/ifanboy and stick your pin in. Say hi. Tell us where you're from. Or you can go to ifanboy.com, click on the link in the upper right-hand corner. That'll take you to the map also.
And when you're at ifanboy.com, stick around. Read some of the conversations that have been going on. We've had a lot of great discussion about Superman Returns this week, and as well as
not nearly as controversial as the X-Men.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
not a lot to fight about.
Yeah, pretty much everyone just kind of agreeing that they enjoyed it. So.
All right, so I'm going to go ahead and reverse my opinion. This movie was awful, and anyone who likes it is terrible. See if that can spur some conversation. No? All right.
No, not so much.
That was lame. I'm sorry.
If you so go to ifanboy.com and check out, you know, get in on the discussion. If you have any questions for us, or you want to get our opinion or something, or you want to hear your name on the podcast, shoot us an email at contact@ifanboy.com. We like to field your questions. So, and also when you're online, you know, if you, like we said, go to iTunes, or if you go to podcastalley.com, you can write a review there or vote for us there as well. So basically, we're looking to all of you to spread the iFanboy word. So
yes.
we need you, the iFanboy army.
Do our work for us.
If you like what you hear, or you like what you read on the site, you can go to ifanboy.com/donations, or you can click on the donation box on the website, and you can, you know, float us some cash. You know, help keep us solvent. Our recommended.
Where is that money? I haven't seen it yet.
Our recommended donation is $1 for an episode, and if you like what you hear on an ongoing basis, you can sign up for a monthly or yearly kind of donation subscription of, I think, $3 for a month or $20 for the year. So
we definitely appreciate our expenses that are incurred.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
And thanks to everybody again. If you donated, you are among the you're a wonderful person. Thank you.
Yes, we express a large amount of gratitude to all of our current and future donors. So, thank you. All right, well, I'm going to get back to the World Cup. I don't know about you guys.
I want to get this phone off my ear. I think I've lost all feeling in my left ear.
That was a heck of a week of comic books.
That was. And
I love good comics, but I'm hoping for a break this week.
Yeah, we'll do it all again next week. Yeah.
This is why, by the way, if you're wondering why we don't talk about every book that comes out,
this is
what you get.
Yep.
We didn't even talk about every book. We talked about less than half.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. I didn't even mention Batman, which was really good.
It was good. See? That's what the website's for, though. Go there. If we missed anything, go talk about it on the
Tell us what you liked. If you liked 52 or Batman or Superman or Runaways or any of the other books that came out this week, let us know.
It wasn't a bad pick in the lot this week, I don't think.
It wasn't. It was a tough week to find one good one. There was all 13 of mine were actually really good. So. All
right, so let's continue this on the site. I'm Josh.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Connor on the phone from Arizona.
People are going to actually think you're in Arizona.
I'm not. Although it feels like it. Hopefully next week with the computer problem will be fixed, and I'll be
hopefully.
Back.
So we'll talk to you again next weekend, and hope you have a good week.
Bye, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Something like 36?
Hold your voice.
Wait, what is that anyway? Something like 36? Does that include me?
37.
I'm 37?
I'm going to class.
Oh my god.